As some of us are going, how to love your work, how to love your job. Oh my goodness, yeah, I can't wait to hear how this happens. It's rough in our society to love our job. Some of us are in very difficult places, working for maybe some unethical people. Others of us feel like we're underemployed. Others of us are unemployed and want to be doing different things. And it's really rare for someone to love their job. And I think it's because there's a storm, if you will, of three factors. A perfect storm. A perfect storm is when there's three pressure systems that are converging. I gotta make a movie about that someday. That'd be kind of cool. There's really a perfect storm of pressure forces that cause us to have a difficult time at work. The first is we feel it's insignificant, insignificance. We've been brainwashed to think that you can do anything you want to do and you can change the world and get paid big money for it. We look at our job and go, I guess somebody's got to do it, but I don't, just don't really feel like it's that significant. We feel that way. The second thing is insecurity. Insecurity. We feel more insecure in our jobs right now than perhaps any other time in human history. You think about how Americans and how people in general have generally been agrarian. So if your job is a farmer, you really don't have that much insecurity. You get up in the morning, you go plant your crops, you make sure they're weeded, and all you got to hope for is that there's rain and you have a job. You wait and you get your fruitfulness, you get paid. No one's going to kind of squeeze you out of your land. You're there. And even the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, Henry Ford, he's got his first assembly line, and you would go and you would stand your marks, you'd put the bolt in the nut, and you would do your thing, and you wouldn't have to worry about lower-cost imports from Japan coming over and taking away your job. You wouldn't have to worry about some multinational corporation coming in and right-sizing. We have more insecurity right now. Someone maybe cheaper and younger is going to take our job. Some market force is going to come in and sweep us away that we're not even aware of. We feel very insecure in our jobs. And then they're incessant. We are unceasingly working right now. You know, my dad was a nuclear engineer for Westinghouse. And he came home and he was home. He wasn't on his, iPhone, or to this day, he doesn't even know what an iPhone is, I don't think. He was never on his iPhone getting text messages. He would go away, this is so crazy, he would go away on vacation, and he wouldn't work. Weird. He wasn't answering mail from corporate Westinghouse. He wasn't taking manuals away with him. Most of us work constantly. It's unceasing. 1965 when I was born, I'm 46 to save you the math problem. In 1965, the CEO of the average corporation made 24 times what the line worker made, 24 times. Today, it's over 300 times. So not twice as much as it was, not four times as much as it was, not 10, 300 times as much. And on both ends, and we won't even get into right now the rightness or wrongness of that within a capitalistic society. We won't even go there right now. I'm just going to say this. I'm going to say if you're on the topper end of that, part of what happens is you do feel like, man, I'm getting a lot of jack. I got to justify my presence. And you don't want to ever unplug. You're always available. You're always on call. You're always answering the email. It's always pressing on your mind. You actually feel guilty when you disconnect because in many ways you feel like you're owned. And if you're at the lower end, you feel like you've got to constantly impress everybody else or else you're going to lose your job. And maybe you don't get paid enough, so you've got to work two and three jobs. It's unceasing. And with all of these factors, we go, oh, gosh, work. It is difficult. And yet, in the Bible, the very first thing we see God doing is working. He's working. Very first verse of the first book in the Bible, it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. He creates, he works. And it gives a blueprint for what he does his first 7 days. So, day number one, God gets up and he separates light from darkness. He does this, and then at the end, he says, it's good. My work today, it's good. Day number two, he starts doing things, all kind of stuff. From day through six, the water and everything, it's good. Starts creating animals in that day, it's good. He is working. He's working. The greatest entity you and I could ever imagine goes to work every day. Goes to work every day, and the Bible is started with him working. Now, I ran across a few years ago a An interesting literary interpretation of how we would work if we were God. And I didn't save who wrote it. I can promise you it wasn't me because it's pretty intelligent sounding. Let me just read it to you. Here's what it says. In the beginning, it was 9 o'clock, so God had to go to work. He filled out a requisition to separate light from darkness. He considered making stars to beautify the night and planets to fill the skies, but he thought it sounded like too much work. And besides, thought God, that's not my job. So he decided to knock off early and call it a day, and he looked at what he had done, and he said, it'll have to do. And on the second day, God separated the waters from the dry land, and he made all the dry land flat, plain, functional, so that, behold, the whole earth looked like Idaho. And he thought about making mountains and valleys and glaciers and jungles and forests, but he decided it wouldn't be worth the effort. And God looked at all that he had done that day, and he said, it'll have to do. And God made a pigeon to fly in the air, and a carp to swim in the waters, and a cat to creep on the ground. And God thought about making millions of other species of all sizes and shapes and colors, but he couldn't drum up any enthusiasm for any other animals. In fact, he wasn't too crazy about the cat. Besides, it was almost time for the late show. So God looked at all he had done, and God said, it'll have to do. And at the end of the week, God was seriously burned out. So he sighed a big sigh of relief, and he said, thank me it's Friday. Man, we need to reclaim the sacredness, the beauty, the value of work. That's what this series is, and specifically today. Here at Crossroads, we like to work. We like to work a lot. Some of us, like myself, are on staff. Others of us, all of us actually, do things above and beyond our normal work life, whether it's at P&G or whether it's at Dairy Queen or whatever it is. And we work, it's called being a volunteer. Volunteering, whether it's making services that come alive, building into kids and kids club, parking large objects in the parking lot, or working down in New Orleans. Go NOLA. We have any faculty, any alumni from a Go New Orleans trip? Yeah, it's amazing the work ethic of this place, the people in this place. One little tidbit you might not know is we send people down to New Orleans every single year, two stints, and we right now, Crossroads is the largest home builder in the entire New Orleans area. Whether it's nonprofit, whether it's corporations that are building, we are the largest builder of homes in the entire city. And we finance more of them, and we send more people in partnership with Habitat for Humanity to put them together. It's really, really, really fun stuff. And so we're going to take a look at a recap video of some of the great work that's happened around here. And even though I've not literally gone and done a Go New Orleans trip, I've enabled them to happen because of my giving. That's what our giving does. It funds the work that we do. And so if you're newer today, no pressure on you. We're excited you're here. But for those of us who understand the vision of how we work around here, this is how we fuel it. Some of us put money inside or checks inside of a fuddy-duddy bag that comes by. Others of us do our giving electronically, e-gift, crossroads.net, some such thing like that. But this for me is encouraging for why we do what we do. Let's check it out.
So there's about 400 people each year that come down to New Orleans. This has been our sixth year running since Katrina hit. The number of people have come down because of the extreme amount of devastation.
Even 7 years after Katrina happened, there's still destruction everywhere. So we continue to have so much work to be down here and so many hands that need to be swinging those hammers.
Cause I'm gonna make this place your home.
We have a strong partnership with Habitat for Humanity. They build a number of new homes each and every year down here, giving them hope and just giving them a new life.
To the demons, they fill you with fear. The trouble in my drag you down.
People from across the United States, from across the world, have come here to help you build on a house, to make sure that my family has a home. Something they don't even have to do, but they do it. It shows you that there's still love in this world. Just the idea that they're thinking of coming here to help a person like me or another family who's in the same conditions that I'm in or living in the same predicament that I'm in or even worse, that lets us know somebody really cares about us.
Oh,
We're working with Franklin Avenue Baptist Church and working with those kids doing Vacation Bible Camp. And, you know, it's just been an amazing experience where we're able to truly entrench ourselves in the city.
We have a photo team that produces photos for families, because that's one of the biggest things that people lost in the storm is their photographs. Settle down, it'll
all be clear. Something in my head needed to flip, and it did. And if I hadn't gone on this trip, I don't think it would have happened. I wouldn't have grown personally. I'd be just not making the progress that I need to become a better person and have a better relationship with God. Just know you're
not alone. And I've seen so many people's lives change. It's funny how sometimes you might go to help somebody and you end up getting blessed yourself. That's how awesome God is.
We're working with the local schools. We work approximately 5 to 6 schools and just helping them paint, remodel, clean desks, just helping teachers get ready for the school year.
The very first time I walked through, my husband was completed. It was amazing. We celebrated, we drank wine, we played music, we was things. It was just so much love. This is my house, this is my home. This is something that I always wanted. I still can't believe it's mine.
Good as that. Man, come on. Amazing. You know, the attitude that we have of feeling how significant and how beautiful that is, I believe we can have that exact same attitude when we go into our day job tomorrow or later on tonight. And if you take a look at the phrases that we have in our society, we tend to devalue work. We have phrases like, thank God it's Friday. Oh, thank God, because Monday to Friday, oh, I can't wait to get done with this hellhole. Thank God. Or we have bumper stickers on the back of our cars. I owe, it's off to work I go. As if I hadn't overspent on my credit card bills, the last thing I'd be doing is going to work today. And of course, we have high forms of art that have impacted many of our backgrounds, where we talk about everybody's working for the Yes, Lover Boy. Of course, you have to be over 40 and white to know that song. It's an excellent song. Everybody's working for the... I don't care who you are. It's funny right there. That's just funny. All right, so we see God, in the beginning of the Bible, working. On day 6, he creates human beings. On day 7, God rests. Our first day of being created... we rest. We'll talk a bit about that next week. And then it's bam, it's off to the races. We were created with the idea of work in mind. In fact, God has created us and put us on the planet to be his governors through working. Here's what it says in Genesis 1:26. Then God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish, over the sea, over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So take care of the environment. Take care of the earth. You're supposed to steward it. Also go out and plant things. Cultivate it. Grow yourself a crop. This is what we've created to do, is to work, be here on this earth. Someone has to be here to work it, to take care of it and get it done. And that's really, in a form, what every job does. If you're a teacher, you're working and taking care of the minds that God has created. If you're a sanitation engineer, you're working and taking care of the right environments so we don't get diseases. If you're an architect, you're working and creating structures for people to live in. If you work for a soap company, you're working and creating products that keep us clean. We're taking care of things, and we should come to the place where we see that work is valued, of the highest esteem. Now, if you know the story, what happens next, or pretty soon thereafter, is God's arch enemy, also known as Satan. He comes in the form of a serpent, and he talks Adam and Eve into doing the one thing God said not to do, was eating this one specific fruit. And when this happens, literally all hell breaks loose in the earth. And now what we have are what's called the curses. God utters judgments that are now going to be ways in which the world has been wired from then until now and on into a portion in the future. And here's what he says. He says this: I will surely multiply your pain and childbearing. In pain you shall bring forth children. You shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field, but by the sweat of your brow you shall eat bread. So they've always supposed to bring forth children to multiply in the earth. That's a job. I've never actually given birth. I've watched it pretty close 3 times. And yes, it is a job. They've always been supposed to take care of the earth, but now it's going to be harder work. In fact, now, as they plant things, now these things called thorns and weeds are going to pop up, choke out the nutrients, and they're going to lose what they've been working on. So work itself is not a curse. God worked himself, so it's always good. It's good. God creates men and women to work, so work is work is good. It's a high, noble thing, but the fact that many of our jobs are frustrating shows that something's wrong in this world. There's difficulty in our work, and there's fruitless labor. Now Adam and Eve go and they plant, and weeds come up and choke out the crop, or now we plant our lettuce, and the lettuce comes up, and a damn deer comes and eats the lettuce. Fruitless labor. You go, man, you shouldn't say that word in church. Yeah, probably not, but if you know anything about my history, a deer almost killed me about 4 years ago on a motorcycle. Hate deers. The only good deer is a dead deer. It's the way it is. Honestly, the only good deer, almost hit another one a couple weeks ago. Not good. So you kill a deer, see a deer, kill a deer, God will be very happy. Not good things. Even if you don't eat it, just kill them. That would be wonderful. So, see, Florence will love that reference. They really will. Those Kentuckians, they dig that. Here in Oakley, we're a little more civilized. Well, hunting, I don't hunt. That's 10 o'clock special. No one else got that. I might have to repeat that. This is 10 o'clock. Is it not 10 o'clock service? Gosh, they just keep going and going. I am working right now. I'm enjoying it, and I am working. It's fruitless labor. Gosh, speaking of Florence and how we work around here, and work is hard. A half hour or so ago, I just got a little snippet of what's happening at the Florence at 9:30. They had a 9:30 service. We have that little. Did I give you that photo? This is the auditorium at 9:30. It's the early service. It's a full auditorium at Florence. Awesomeness. 9:30. This is the kids club line. We have a kids club line. A line outside of waiting to get into Kids Club. That we expected the 11 o'clock service to be crowded. This is, isn't that fun? Very, very, very fun. And all that, as we'll talk in a moment, came as a result of work. Now, 4 reasons why I love to work. And I hope you do too, or you'll get to at the end of this time. Number one, I love to be productive. I love to be productive. God, the picture we get of God in the Bible is he produces things. He produces things. Every once in a while, someone will say, well, you know, don't you? Well, what if there's extraterrestrials? I mean, wouldn't that, like, eliminate the idea of God if there's a... No. No. I mean, my God has produced, and my God is still producing. I'm pretty confident he's still producing galaxies right now. God didn't produce the world and then, but I'm done. Whew, I'm glad I don't have to work again. God is a creator. He is a producer. And when he's created you in his image, you're created unlike any gerbil or any grizzly bear. You and I are created to produce. We like when we produce. And I love to work because I get to be productive. In fact, there's signs on how my body's put together that tells me I'm created to be productive. I'm created to work. Right here, thumbs. Retractable thumbs. Or opposable, I mean. Opposable thumbs. They can oppose one another. You know, we are the only entity that has this. and enables us to work and do things that nothing else can do. We have minds that have creative capacities to produce things that no other creative being ever will produce. No gerbil will ever produce a crop. It doesn't have the ability to think through, well, how do I do? If I do this and plant it and then come back and weed, a year from now, I'll have food. Nothing does that. They don't produce that. Maybe beavers put together dams or birds create nests, but it's not the level of production that we have. No other entity has produced a wheel. I'll get a wheel so I can work and haul more stones. I will produce a school so that I can be a teacher as a job and I can produce higher learning. No goldfish has ever produced higher learning for its offspring. We do this, we have these jobs because we want to be productive, we want to produce things. And honestly, you have to hear me. I feel like I have a significant job right now. I feel like my job is, I love my job in so many ways. I have the dream job, but I got to tell you, I don't feel my job is any more honorable before God than any of the jobs that you have or any of the jobs I've had in my past. My first job was a paper boy. There's these little kids that used to have satchels with papers in them, and they'd walk along. Now it's, 40-year-olds driving 50 miles an hour through our neighborhoods at 5 a.m. It was a job. I used to actually do this thing that was called flipping hamburgers. No, I don't mean put them on a conveyor belt. No, I mean literally be in front of a flame-fried thing and literally flip burgers. I came to know Christ right around that time, and God's word and his insight just started changing me, and I started seeing things differently. I saw the value of work. I went away to college at 17 years old, and from the time I was 17 till now, I think I've slept under my parents' roof 2 days. And it isn't because I didn't love my parents, it's because I wanted the adventure of going out and doing and being away. And so my first summer, after my first year in college, I wanted to stay in the house where I was, but I needed a job, and I went to a guy I knew who was a high-end home builder. And I said, look, I don't know much about carpentry or construction, but I just want a job. Whatever you need, clean toilets, whatever it is, I'll do it. So I was what was called a grunt worker, a grunt laborer. So when the backhoe couldn't get up the hill to fill in the back of the foundation because it was too muddy, I did it by hand with clods of dirt and throwing them in. When there was a need to fill dumpsters, I filled dumpsters. When there was demo in an old carriage house where it turned to a high-end home in Swickley Heights, I had to go in with a coal shovel, bash off the plaster, shovel the plaster in the big container, pull off the lath, the crowbar, then pull out the rock wall. I'd go home and I'd pick black boogers for 48 hours. I mean, huge, massive runs. Then the next summer, I had a friend of mine who was a bit cheap, and he didn't want to hire a real contractor, so he asked me if I could build an addition. I said, well, I've been watching. I think I could do it. So he lived on this top hill in this place called Swickley, which is sort of one of the rich places in Pittsburgh, top of this hill. And I had to get a backhoe up to the side to pull away the hillside to put the addition, but there was no driveway. So I had to get 95 or something like that, maybe it was 110 old railroad ties, and he was too cheap to buy the new pressurized ones. So I had to go grade 2 old railroad ties, 8 foot long, pressure treated, and creosote. Those suckers were so heavy. And building this sucker by myself, going up the hill until I could get a backhoe up and hired somebody to do that. They pulled away the side of the hill. We found out why the house was nice white stucco. It's because it was a Sears and Roebuck kit house, and they had not put it on a foundation. And so the stucco was to hide all the cracks in this house they just bought. As I pulled it away, started building the new foundation, started to rain, and over the course of 2 months, the house started to slide down the hill. You could probably still go to the Swickley Library, find this old local publication. The mayor lived in the same street, and she'll talk about the rape of a hillside. Yes, I was a rapist. I raped a hillside. Yet, while I was doing it, and at the time I was also trained to be in ministry as my job, I never felt like what I was doing wasn't significant. I knew I was doing something that God had given me capacity to do. Work is honorable. Anytime you produce something. And by the way, some of us, our job, our full-time job is a stay-at-home parent, and you're not getting a traditional paycheck, but when we enter into it through the standpoint of I am producing something, it is work. It's something that God loves. It's one of the reasons why empty nesters have such a hard time. Your kids leave and all of a sudden crisis. I mean, many ways, it's awesome. Whew, kids gone. Bye-bye. See ya. But at the other hand, all of a sudden, you're not producing anything. I was producing kids that were well-rounded. I was ready. Now, what do I do? What's that? Retirement. This is one of the real dangers of retirement. If you think that you want to get to, your goal is to get to a place where you don't work and you live in Branson, Missouri, bad idea. I mean, if you need to hit the slots every once in a while, hit the slots. But studies are very clear that if you retire and don't have a purpose, you will die earlier than people who do have a purpose. Doesn't mean you're necessarily going to be on a payroll, but you must have something that enables you to feel like you are productive. I love being productive. And you can be productive in whatever you're doing. And I love using my assets. I love using my assets. Having what God has given me and putting it into play. Your hands are assets. Your mind is an asset. And even though the curse is there's unfruitful work, even though that means that you may use your mind to crunch Excel spreadsheets, and then all of a sudden, as a result of the curse, the network goes down and you lose your work, it's still an asset you have of your brain. Even though you have a winning personality, that's one of your assets, and you can sell ice to Eskimos, and you can go and you do everything right with the key account, you might have somebody else who swoops in and uses your key client as a loss leader to build other categories that they have, and you lose the account. It's called fruitless labor. Nonetheless, you were in the game because there was assets God gave you as a salesperson, as a teacher, as a union carpenter, whatever it is. All these things are assets that God has blessed us with. In the book of Psalm chapter 90, verse 17, it says this, "Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish the work of our hands upon us." Yes, establish the work of our hands. So what our hands do is an asset that God has given us. So he partners with us, but we use our hands and engage in work. You know, and throughout the entire Bible, we see that God values normal work. Kind of bums me out when I interact with people who think that the closer I get to God, the more spiritually mature I become, the more likely it is that God's going to take me out of my well-paying job and he's going to have me live naked in the Congo translating the Bible. Or, man, if I really get spiritual, then God's going to have me go work at the Salvation Army or a Crossroads. I mean, there's a small percentage of people that God may have that path for. But you need to hear me very, very, very. Where you are right now is where God wants you. Where you are right now is where you can be productive and where you can use your assets. And we see heroes throughout the entire Bible who have normal jobs, and we never see them as less than. Never. Jesus, from age, I don't know what it is, 6 to 30 or so, he's a carpenter. He's being trained, and he's a carpenter. And we never see him going, oh, it's a dead-end job. This sucks. It's a dead-end job. Man, when am I going to get to, like, raise people from the dead? I need to, like, get out there and motivate people. No, he's perfectly content being a carpenter. He never views as a less than. In fact, the other people he calls to a different kind of vocation are very happy with their profession. They're fishermen. Some of them fishermen. Jesus isn't going, hey, it's time for you to do something significant. Come follow me. No, he just calls them to something different. That's significant. The Apostle Paul, the person who's responsible more than anybody else for penning the New Testament. He puts in the Bible, it's there in the scriptures, that people like me, it's an honorable thing, there's people like me who work and they get a living, I get paid by your generosity, and that's a job, and he defends that and says that's a good thing, that's fine. And at the same time, he says this, he says, but I've chosen that I'm going to remain a tent maker, I'm going to finance personally my own ministry, I'm going to stay a tent maker, making amazing tents. It's not this idea of, all right, I'll take one for the team. We all have our cross to bear, and I'm going to bear a normal job. Oh, it sucks. No, I never have that. It's like my job. It's what I do. I have value with it. He gets to, and I think he actually liked the fact that he could see something productive. He could create something and say, oh, a tent, I did that. Many days, I can't look at something and say, I did that. Part of what Florence is exciting for me and others of us, I go, oh, okay, something just got produced. I can't always quantify personal spiritual growth that people go through, but the Apostle Paul has an amazing honorable job. Oh, here's another one. Lydia. Lydia, she's a trader of purple cloth. She's a leader in the early church. Now, a trader of purple cloth, purple pigments and getting threads into purple is a very extravagant, difficult process in the ancient world. Purple, what's the point of purple? Nothing. There's no point in purple. Maybe it was her initial creativity that led to Barney decades later. We're not sure exactly why, but her trading in purple cloth was an extravagant luxury item that people said, no one needs that. Only the rich who had money to burn would ever have purple cloth, and yet a leader in the early church is trading in purple cloth. It'd be like today, somebody trading in Gucci. Today, somebody selling Rolls Royces. I mean, some people might say, it's a job. It's a job, and it fills the desire for people, and that is a valuable thing. Nowhere does it look like, oh, she's a real spiritual woman, but she has this job where she trades purple cloth. No. Over and over, every kind of job. There's some jobs that aren't. Child pornography, if you're in that, God doesn't love that job. But most of our jobs, we just think that they're beneath us, or they're unspiritual, or they don't value us, or it's difficult. Hey, if you see it as a unique opportunity to use your assets and to be productive, hopefully it can help us. Number three, tension from vision. I love my job because it creates tension. It creates tension, and it actually comes from a vision. The fact that you have a job, or you would like to have a job if you're unemployed right now, shows that you have a vision for something that you would like. The reason we have struggled with our jobs is it's work. And all work brings some sort of tension with it. We sweat. It's difficult. We have to think. A number of years ago, I had a friend of mine said, hey, I'm going to have a bunch of people together. I have a friend of mine who's a big wine guy. He understands how wines are made. He actually got a little wine shop. And I'm going to have a bunch of people together and kind of learn about wines. Would you like to come and do that with me? And I thought to myself, no. That's what I thought. I thought there's wine connoisseurs and then there's wine sewers, and I'm a wine sewer. I mean, I can tell white and red. That's about it. So I wasn't really excited about the wine thing, but I thought this is a great dude. I'd love to spend time with the family, other people. So yeah, I'll do it. So I went and hung out. And what do you know? I really enjoyed it on multiple levels. One of the things I found interesting is that the reason why grapes from France create such amazing wine is because of the tension in establishing their roots. And I would think that, man, if you want to have awesome wine, go out to Idaho where you have thick, dark topsoil and plant some grapes. No, great wines don't come from there. The great wines come from very thin soil that's very rocky, and the roots have to work to get themselves in, and that process of tension, that stress, produces something of amazing flavor that's unsurpassed in other kinds of soils. In other words, it is the tension that brings out the beauty. In fact, you're probably an interesting person. People think you're an interesting person because of the tension you've gone through in your life. The job gives flavor to our lives. If all we were doing was just sitting on a beach, we wouldn't have any flavor. There'd be nothing about our lives that has a high value. I have three kids, and each of my kids goes through this sort of moment where they have a bad attitude towards school. By the way, if you're a student, that is a job. It's a job. I wish someone had told me that. I wish someone had painted it as a job. If they had painted it as a job for me, I might have done better in school. It's one of my regrets. I really did not apply myself in my job as a student as I did in my other jobs. So I took that learning, I came to understanding, so I've tried to help my kids see their schoolwork as a job. And there's always this pivotal moment with my kids. It normally goes something like this. They're sitting in front of the computer at night, and they're looking at the computer with, you know, bleary eyes, or they have a book on the table, and they're holding their hand, and they're silent, and I walk by, and they'll say something like, this is stupid. And I said, wow, what's the problem? This is dumb. So dumb. I said, what do you mean? This is so stupid. I'm never going to use this. Why do I have to learn this? It's so stupid. Ridiculous. And they think I'm going to launch into this whole thing of, oh, no. This is going to impact your future right here. Oh, this geometric proof that you have to memorize, it's going to change everything in your life. Everything. They think I'm going to defend You know, they think I'm going to spout out reasons why you should know that a three-sided object is 160 degrees and four-sided objects are 420 degrees. I mean, you should know these things. These are going to wait a minute. 183.60, yes, that's what they think I'm going to defend this process. And then I said, yeah, you're right. You're never going to use this. These cards you're having to call you, you're never going to have to remember the GDP of Ethiopia. It's not going to do anything for you, ever. And they look at me and go, well, why do I do it? And I said, because this is a job. This is a job. And what you're doing is you're working to get the sheepskin. Because some people are not going to do the work and they're not going to get the sheepskin. And as a result of you getting the sheepskin, you're going to have opportunities and options that other people are not going to have. That's often what we do with our jobs. I'm hitting the nail every day, being faithful, using my assets, because if I do it well, I have a vision for things other than this, and this job will qualify me. I'm going to go through tension, and people who think it's stupid or why should I do that, they don't have opportunities and options. You are going to have opportunities and options. The job, and this never ends, by the way. Never ends about how you do your dreary stuff when you're 35 or you're 40. I mean, if you don't have a vision for where you're going, you won't endure through the tension, and when you have tension, you can say, yeah, that's why I'm in this job, because I have the tension of the vision that I'm trying to go after. It's a beautiful thing, and you might not even know right now exactly what your vision is or where God's going to take you, what's going to happen, but I can promise this right now. If you don't engage in the tension and you don't work hard right now, whatever could happen will not happen. It's exactly the truth. But when I go into it, I say, I love this, something's going to change. It's true, isn't it? This tension does do something really well for us. It does something special. We all go to restaurants, right? And we see an old couple. They're sitting there in the restaurant, and we're there the whole time, and we just see everything, and they don't talk the entire meal. Have you seen that? Isn't that sad? They never talk. I'll tell you what's happened. What's happened is they got no tension in their life. They've organized their life to now where everything is easy. They don't need any money. They don't need any, they have no pressure. Their kids are out there. There's no vision. There's no tension. Now they have nothing to talk about. There's nothing there. It's a great thing when we have a healthy amount of tension in our life, which exactly what a job does. So, hey, if you're a stay-at-home parent, yes, there's tension there. It's difficulty, but there's a vision. If you're in high school, if you're in college right now, it's a job. Go through the tension. Hit your marks. Prepare yourself for something better. Qualify yourself by being a person who shows up and does your best. Number four, the reason I love to work, I love my job, is because I love rewards. I love rewards. Now, stay with me on this, because this is going to sound really sacrilegious to some of us. I love to work because it gives me things I wouldn't have had if I didn't work. I love that. In fact, what it gives me is it gives me money I wouldn't have if I didn't work. Let me tell you something. I am financially motivated. It's not my main motivation, but it is absolutely a motivator. And this is a biblical idea. Actually, God motivates us by letting us know there's certain things that you will have if you are faithful in the job of serving Him, of following Him. Now, whoever receives Jesus gets a free gift to heaven. Awesome, wonderful thing. And the Bible's also very clear. I'm not going to go into all of it today. Just one verse I'll give you. But I was also very clear that there's different rewards, different things that you get in heaven based on how well you work here. I'll just give you one verse as an example. Revelation chapter 22, verse 12. Jesus says this, "Behold, I'm coming soon, bringing my recompense with me to repay each one for what he's done." I don't expect to have the same level of recompense in heaven as Mother Teresa has right now. She's getting things in heaven that somebody who gives their life to Christ in the death chamber, she's getting things that they're not going to get. Now, every once in a while, I read something, I go, ooh, gosh, amazing writer, but idea is off a bit. I want to share something with you that amazing writer I like, but the idea is off. And I just read this because this is sort of the attitude many of us had towards paychecks. Here's what he says. His name is Tim Kreider. My old colleague, Ted Rawl, recently wrote a column proposing that we divorce income from work and give each citizen a guaranteed paycheck, which sounds like the kind of lunatic notion that will be considered a basic human right in about a century, like abolition, universal suffrage, and eight-hour workdays. The Puritans turned work into a virtue, evidently forgetting that God invented it as a punishment. So we already covered before, the guy just doesn't understand the Bible, which if he doesn't read it, I don't blame him. But no, we already covered very clearly, work was not a punishment. Work is a blessing. It's something God invites us into. So he's got that one. And here he also talks about this idea of, this idea that somehow your pay should be connected with your work. Oh, that's such a stupid idea. Just as we realize that slavery is a stupid idea, someday we'll learn that everyone should just get the same amount of money regardless of what they do. No, that's not truth. There are things that I do that enable me to get other things, and God actually has this as in his spiritual economy. And I'm not here captain defender that everything in capitalism is right. I don't believe everything in capitalism is right. But nonetheless, I'm telling you that as a person who loves to work, you also have to come to a place where you enjoy the rewards from it. I'll give you a couple verses from it. Proverbs 14:23. In all toil there is profit, but mere talk tends only to poverty. Profit, not a dirty word here. If you want profit, you must toil. We have this weird thing. I find this people who are in churches or people who want to be close with God, this weird thing like money. We have this attitude about money like the Victorians had towards sex. You can have it, but don't enjoy it. And the same way we go, you can have money. You better not like it. You better not be motivated. You better not have nothing to do. No. It says here, you should know that if you toil, there's something in the back end. If you just talk about it instead of work about it, you have poverty. You get nothing. Get off your rumpus dumpus and get the lead out and get working and see an incentive to that. Why you should love it is you'll have things that you couldn't have had otherwise. Ecclesiastes 5:18-19. Behold, what I've seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, the few days of his life that God has given him. For this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil. This is the gift of God. So it's like God gives us hands. He gives us the ability to work. He gives us opportunities. But yet we have to engage. We have to do it. And when we do, what's one of the incentives? To eat and drink and find enjoyment. To maybe buy a boat. To maybe be able to take a vacation. And again, this is not should not be the primary motivation that defines our life, but absolutely is there. It's definitely something that's said, man, I need to get up in the morning. I need to work hard. I need to put an honest day's wage and go above and beyond. Now, the Bible establishes work before it establishes virtually anything else. Like we're here today, we're in a worship environment, a church service, and good, wonderful. There's things in the Bible that talk about what you should do in an environment like this. You should read the Bible. Singing is good. In fact, there's books of the Bible that talk about how to worship in a sort of traditional religious way, but they come like three books after the book of Genesis. We have Genesis, and God hasn't told people how to have a worship service. They don't even have a Bible. He hasn't told them how to pray. And what's the image? It's not that they're thwarted spiritual individuals. It's that their work is worship. Their work is a reflection of God that they want to be like him. They want to be productive like him. They want to engage like him. So I just want to tell you, whatever your job is tomorrow, you have an opportunity to work. You have an opportunity to worship God, to study in a way that honors God, to make a sales call in a way that honors God, maybe even doing something difficult like make layoffs in a way that honors God. It's worship. It's valued, and it's a blessing that you get to do it. No other created entity does. Father, thank you for giving us value. Every once in a while, we forget that we're not an amalgamation of random proteins. That you've actually created us, and we actually have purpose. Help us to be satisfied with where we are right now, and knowing that there could be a vision of something else, but we need to work and love it and see it as honorable. Thank you, God, for enlisting us in something that is beyond simply sustaining our species, to actually partner with you in this world. You're good. Amen.